You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
And welcome back to the Masters of Modern podcast. I am your host, Captain Boat, here with my co-host and minion, Ben Bateman.
What have you done with Alex?
I am now the boss of this Battle Boss podcast.
You'll never be my boss.
I'm a cap. That's Captain. I didn't go to 7 years of Captain school to not be called Captain Boat. I'm not Boss Boat. I'm Captain Boat.
Not 1 minute into the show, we are already completely off the rails. Welcome, everybody, to the MMCast, our weekly show. We talk modern content in the Magic the Gathering world, and we have a second half of a set review we have to do today for the newest set.
That is
the
true.
The brand newest Magic cards in all the land. So,
and before we do that, that was Captain Boat. He's one of the bosses from the game that we are coming out with and have released and is now going back to Kickstarter backers called Battle Bosses. You get cool figures like Captain Boat here, or Ryu, who looks like a dragon. Well, she is a dragon. Right here. So definitely check that out at kes.co/shop or just battlebosses.com. And we'd love for your feedback. It's a dope game. And then today also, if you are going to go buy stuff at TCG Player, there's a link below. And if you click that link, you get to help the podcast. Anything you buy in TCG Player from moving forward until you click another creator's content link will just like it'll remember that we sent you there. So it's really appreciated if you use that link when you buy stuff. Helps us out and helps the podcast out.
Absolutely. We are always trying to get better and grow and evolve. So anyway, you guys can help us do that. If you like the show, please do.
As normal in our episodes, we just did our shout out at the beginning. There's trivia that's important. And the way this game works is you're going to hit that. We're going to ask you a trivia question. I'm going to ask Ben a trivia question. He's going to try and answer it. If you get it correctly, please comment below. Go comment your answer while Ben's trying to figure it out. If you get it correct, you don't have to do anything. You're not betting anything. But if you get it wrong, you have to hit that like button. That's really the important thing. If you get it right and you want to hit that like button,
gotta do it.
Great. That's appreciated. But if you get it wrong, if you don't know the answer to the trivia question or you guess the wrong one, you definitely have to hit the like button. That's the bet you made. We apologize that we're forcing you to hit that like button, but it helps all the algorithms and it's super appreciated regardless. But Ben.
Yes.
In 2010's From the Vault, there was one of the enemy colored protection swords included in that set. And it was the first time we saw that. It was later printed immediately after that in the next block of the swords. Which one was printed in From the Vault Relics? Which of the famous protection sword equipment was debuted in From the Vault Relics?
Well, Alex, you see, I know this one. It's protection from blue and green, and it is Sword of Body and Mind. It was originally previewed in that From the Vault, and it came out just shortly thereafter Mirrodin or Scars of Mirrodin? Not Mirrodin.
You have the answer. I want that. That's another
set. What set was it in? It came out in Scars of Mirrodin, I think.
Yep, that is correct. What year?
Oh. Okay, let's trace it back here and try to go back in my mind. Well, did you say it at the beginning? You might have said it. But Scars of Mirrodin would have been, got back in at New Phyrexia, I think.
This is just before our friendship.
It's 2010?
Yep, correct. That was it. It was 2010. You got it. All right. So that's true, everyone. Hit that like button. And if you got it wrong, if you got it right, also just hit the like button. Come on. Be a pal, friend.
Be a pal.
All right. And last thing, shout out to our patron and specifically Patrick Davidson. Thank you so much for being a noble of House Martin. Pinkies up.
Pinkies up.
Thank you to our other patrons for making this podcast happen. If you would like to be a part of that patron, you can click the link below, patreon.com/themcast, and you get the episode a week early. That's the big thing. If you get up to a higher level, we'll start shouting you out. We'll follow you on Twitter. There's a bunch of other cool stuff on there, so check that out as well. But the big one is early access and basically a direct line of communication to me and Ben, because that is the easiest place where we will respond. All right. Now, let's get into the review. We are second half. Gonna sneeze. second half of Midnight Haunt. It's a Midnight Hunt, as the world would like to tell me. I like Haunt better. Why do I like...
I was convinced it was Haunt because you'd said it that way so many times.
Yep, it's Midnight Hunt because werewolves hunt. They don't haunt. Today in the set review, we are doing Planeswalkers, enchantments, instants, sorceries, and lands. If you want to check out the previous thing, it is on the channel on YouTube or on any place you listen to your podcast for creatures and artifacts. That's over there. We are starting with the Planeswalkers, and there are three, and they are all pretty spicy. All right, first one is Arlen Cord. So this is Arlen the Pax Hope, 2 red and a green, legendary Planeswalker Arlen, Daybound. +1 until your next turn, you may cast creature spells as though they had flash, and each creature you control enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. -3, create 2/2 green wolf creature tokens. If it is on the Nightbound side, so you either did not cast spells that turn, or it is already night and you cast Arlen Cord into the nighttime, you can +2 to add a red and a green, and then you can 0 until end of turn. Arlen the Moon's Fury becomes a 5/5 werewolf creature with trample, indestructible, and haste. She is amongst the very few Gideons, Sarkons, etc. that can just get in a fight. She likes the brawl because she's a werewolf.
It's a pretty good card. Also, you know, so you start with the basics anytime you evaluate a Planeswalker, which is that I think that whatever the minus ability, the first basic minus ability is, it's usually all but one loyalty, and it accomplishes the equivalent of what a spell would do, but, you know, a little bit less good usually, just only because you have to balance it also being a Planeswalker. So right. The -3 is 4 power over 2 bodies for 4 mana. I mean, we used to play in the first Innistrad, the black card, blue, you know, it was like black 2, and it would make you 2/2 zombies. I think it had a flashback for like 7 or something like that. But I mean, we've all spent 4 mana for 2 creatures before. But you also get left, she stays alive. I mean, she's still a Planeswalker with 1 loyalty at that point. So
right, she's very similar to, like, well, the easiest and the quickest thing she reminds me of is Huntmaster of the Fells, right?
Yeah.
Like, she has the ability to come down, you get 2/2 power creatures in play, and then a value engine that also stays in play alongside them. And with Arlen Cord, in many ways, I think she's just better than Huntmaster because she comes down as the 2/2 sides. You don't gain life, so you don't have the stability. But then on the next turn, you're able to, you know, allow you to create creatures, allow you to cast creatures with flash, which lets you flip her. And then when you flip her to the other side, you have a ramp spell, but more importantly, you have the ability, you have a 5/5. So you have your 2 first 2/2s and a 5/5. So on turn, I guess on turn 6, you end up with, you know, 9 power worth of attacking creatures off of Arlen. And that's not including the what you did to flip it to get a +1.
I think the drawback here, the thing that stands out to me that is not the same as Huntmaster, and you may be right, this might just be better, but the drawback here for me is that Huntmaster's ability to deal 4 damage to a creature when it flips is actually a way to deal with things, not just things that want to attack Huntmaster or things that would potentially attack Arlen, but that piece of Huntmaster and the life gain, I think, are both pretty significant, but I would agree it's in the running, though Huntmaster doesn't see play in Modern really these days. I mean, it's a little tiny bit, but barely in the Jund deck.
Sure. Well, the point is, I think that's why I'm saying it's better, right? Like, I think if this was worse than Huntmaster, it wouldn't see play. And like, the other card it's in most contention with is Bloodbraid Elf.
Right.
Which, has fallen out of favor with the fact that we're now living in Zoomer Jund, right? With you have Lurrus in the command zone, which Arlen also doesn't let you kind of play with Lurrus. So this has to also, it has to overcome Lurrus, and it has to overcome Bloodbraid Elf. And I don't know if it quite does it. I do think it's doing exactly enough unique things that it has the potential to, but I just don't think it's quite there.
I mean, I do think there's something pretty cool to minus threeing for two two twos to block and keep your board going as you plus up getting the ability to, you know, to take advantage of your day by night bound flip. And also, I mean, it matters that they have flash, and it also matters that they come with an additional counter on them. It's a big deal. So I think this card's pretty sweet.
Yeah. I think it's pretty close. Right. And I think if this card, for instance, was printed 4 years earlier, I think it we'd be freaking out about how dope this card is.
Agreed.
The next card, Teferi Who Slows the Sunset. 2 white blue, legendary planeswalker Teferi, comes in down with 4 loyalty. +1, choose up to 1 target artifact, up to 1 target creature, and up to 1 target land. Untap the chosen permanents you control. Tap the chosen permanents you don't control. You gain 2 life. Look at the top 3 cards of your library. Put 1 of them into your hand and the rest in the bottom of your library in any order. And then -7, you get a emblem with untap all permanents you control during your each opponent's untap step, and you draw a card during each opponent's draw step. A lot of people are jokingly referring to this Teferi as Tefair, F-A-I-R-E, because of the Teferis that have of the Teferis printed, this is by far the fairest of all of them, including the creatures. People were like kind of hyped about this. I recorded a TikTok about this. I don't get it. Like, it goes infinite with Chain Veil, so like there's stuff to do that's cool with it in older formats. I don't know. I think I don't think this is anywhere close to competing with the 2 Teferis or Jace the Mind Sculptor that are all legal in Modern for this to ever see play in this format.
Yeah, it just, when I look at it and I read it and I think about it, in it's a blue white, you know, control walker, obviously. So you're competing with Mind Sculptor in that slot. You obviously have 5 mana Teferi, 3 mana Teferi. Like, you know, those are the types of cards that show up. And I just can't see in my mind how this is going to be better.
Yeah, and it's not even a control one. I think what, like, this card is best in Bant decks that have a like mana dorks, right? You need, like, this Noble, like, the fact that Noble Hierarch is as good as Noble Hierarch can be makes Teferi Who Slows the Sunset a little bit better because you can combine them.
Right.
So, like, And that's good, but I still think he's not very strong. I do love his name, though. Teferi Who Slows the Sunset is like a dope.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yep, I'm into that. All right, next Planeswalker and last of the 3. Renn 7, 3 green-green, legendary Planeswalker Renn, 5 loyalty when it comes into play. You plus it to reveal the top 4 cards of your library, put all land cards revealed this card into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. 0, put any number of land cards from your hand onto the battlefield tapped. -3, create a green treefolk creature token with reach, and this creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of lands you control. And -8, return all permanent cards from your graveyard to your hand. You get an emblem with you have no maximum hand size. Of the 3 planeswalkers, this is the one. Well, already this is already a dominant force in Standard, right? Like, this has become one of the strongest cards in the format. In Modern, more things to leap over. I do think this has potential. The fact that this list of abilities is so good in Amulet Titan decks or decks with Amulet, because you can have Amulet in play and 0 and then take advantage of all of those lands entering play from your hand untapped, is a legit thing, right? Like, that's, I think, where this card to me shines the most, as a like a useful one of card draw engine or even sideboard against controller matchups that like maybe have better creature removal but not planeswalker removal. It is 5 mana, and 5 mana planeswalkers have a much higher barrier to entry. Not to say that
there's only a couple I can think of that have ever seen Modern play. Like, I mean, five mana Tezzeret before has seen some play.
Gideon, the original Gideon.
Teferi, five mana Teferi.
There's been some 6 mana ones. In the world But the ones that have normally have a reason for it, right? And like, the reason 5 mana Teferi plays is because it's really 3 mana, but that you play on turn 5, right? It's like 5 mana, but then you can hold counter magic up. And Renn 7 has that feature, right? It's, if you have an amulet in play and you play Renn 7, you untap some amount of lands, whatever amount of lands you had in your hand.
I also think when you read this card, going back to the same example I was just using a second ago when talking about Arlen, what's the minus ability? What are you getting? You know, and what you're getting is for 5 mana, you're getting a planeswalker with sick abilities at 2 loyalty, and you're also probably getting a 5/5 creature. It's a 4/4 if you've accelerated into it. But I mean, if you play this on turn 5 like you're supposed to, you are getting a 5/5, and you're also getting a Planeswalker at 2 loyalty for 5 mana.
Well, and in these decks, you're probably not playing it then, right? You're probably playing on turn, like on turn 5 or on turn 4 at the latest in Amulet Titan decks or Scapeshift decks. You're getting a 5/5 and a Planeswalker, and then when you untap. And if you play Renin 7/0 and you have two extra lands in your hand, you now have a 7/7 or bigger that just like starts swinging.
Yeah, I mean, I think to your example of how it would work in a proper modern deck that already plays, and like I think that's correct. I'm just more thinking about the like on a card power evaluation. I'm pretty happy for 5 mana to be left with a perfectly functional Planeswalker and also have a creature that's going to get exponentially larger as the game goes on.
Right.
It seems like pretty good value for 5. Like yeah. I don't think we would play very many 5-mana 5/5s in Modern. Like, I obviously know that a vanilla one would never see play. But if you add enough bells and whistles to a 5-mana 5/5, it gets bigger. Well, that's one of the bells and whistles, I guess. It does start to become pretty appealing. I think this card's pretty pushed. But I think at this point, if you push walkers at 5-mana, that's okay.
Yeah,
you can put as many powerful 5-mana walkers as you want. That's not going to ruin my game.
I agree. I think this card has potential to see play in Modern, which is saying a lot. 4 or 5 mana anything.
Yeah.
And generally the things that have the highest chance of seeing play in Modern for above 3 mana are things that refer to lands and help you pilot out a Valakut win, pilot out a amulet based win, and Renin 7 does that. All right, we are now on to enchantments.
All right.
Now, funnily enough, there's only two, and they're both black. The first one is Ghoulish Procession. 1 and a black enchantment. Whenever one or more non-token creatures dies, create a 2/2 black zombie creature token with decayed. This ability triggers only once each turn.
Okay. It can trigger once on each turn, though.
So this allows all the creatures that you have that die in, like, an Aristocrat's deck.
Yeah.
Non-token one. So, like, to come back. And people have also been pointing that's in the zombie list because you're playing with Gravecrawler, right? Like, with Gravecrawler in this, you're able to twice a turn get just 2 decay zombies every turn. And decay zombies have something that's been really impressive to me. They're something that, like, I thought was going to be pretty bad and have been, like, a little bit more powered up than I thought they were.
Well, wait, with Gravecrawler, you can sacrifice it on your turn and get a 2/2, but you can't sacrifice it a second time because it only triggers once per turn. Yeah, so you would sacrifice it on their turn.
Correct. Right. So you can like go back and if you don't have a like thing to do with all your death triggers, but you just have like a sac outlet that lets you do that, and you can go back and forth. Why not get some extra zombies out of it?
Better or worse than Blood Artist?
In zombies, better. Not better. Different.
All right.
Like you can't get rid of it, right? It's much more removal resistant. It plays much more similarly to. And the zombie tokens you get benefited more than a Blood Artist that, like, any removal spell in Modern murders by itself.
Blood Artist is such a sweet card.
That is true. I mean, I don't hate a Blood Artist. But I think, and the fact that Blood Artist is a vampire, right, you don't get to, like, use any of the other tools to find it, or if you're playing anything like that. All right, the next card, which I think is the one people are talking about more, and speaking of Blood Artist, the Meat Hook Massacre, X-Black-Black, Legendary Enchantment. When the Meat Hook Massacre enters the battlefield, each creature gets -X/-X until end of turn. Then it's an enchantment. Whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent loses one life. Whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, you gain one life. So if you want to talk about a Blood Artist, so for 2 mana, this has Blood Artist vibes, right? Your creatures, yeah. When they die, any type of Aristocrat stuff you're doing, your opponent loses life and very difficult to get rid of permanent. Then you add the layer of whenever their creatures die, you gain life. So you get some amount of stability through it. And more importantly, it's also a good board wipe, right? For 4 mana, you get rid of all X2s. For 5 mana, you get all X3s.
It's Black's specialty, which is what you see a lot out of Black, which is the -/-. It gets around indestructible and hexproof as well.
Yep.
Yeah, which is pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I got to say, this kind of feels like a card that would have gone in Hunted Handsome.
sure.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, for 2, it's just triggering. But it's supposed to be every creature. Okay. Yeah. It's whenever one of their creatures dies, they lose a life. So it's still pretty good in that deck. I mean, it's not as good as things that are parallel.
Sure. You know? This is also currently the most expensive card in the set, I believe, with $36. Wow. Foils are going for $80.
Geez, people like this card a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So this card's pretty high. Now that I think has a lot to do with Commander, but also just viability, like what we're talking about. This is like a modern playable card. The fact that you can also play this in Lurrus decks because it's a 2-mana card is like a big important thing to keep an eye on here.
That's big game for sure. I mean, look, it's at a minus pair. It's basically Parish for 4 mana if you cast it like that. Mm-hmm. Parish has never seen play really in Modern.
But Parish didn't come attached with a Blood Artist, right? Like,
no, I mean, for sure. I just mean, like, when you're trying to sort of compare this to something previously, Parish costs 3. It would be the equivalent of, you know, minus one, everything for the same cost. It does make me wonder, is -2/-2 just not good enough? And if this starts to cost 5 for people, are they never going to play it? But I do think the point about having it in Lurrus is pretty...
I think the versatility is also... Well, but you cast this before you cast Lurrus, right?
Yeah.
Or if you need to out of your graveyard, you can. It's like an option. I think the fact that this is going to be a card that when you need it can scale up well. Like, yes, it doesn't get rid of the 4 pluses, but there's so many creatures in Modern like that are X1s, right? Like just like I wouldn't play Parish by itself, right? Because sometimes it'll be dead. But the fact that when it's dead, you can wait a turn and now it's not dead. But most of the time you're getting rid of Roggevon, you're getting rid of Dragon Rage Channelers, getting rid of, like, you can get rid of a lot of stuff. I think it's pretty strong, especially for stuff like Boomer Jund or Zoomer Jund and other stuff like that. All right, that is enchantments. We're going on to instants, and this is a much longer list. All right, the first instant is Consider. I think this is one of the cards that even before the set was spoiled, we like all knew was going to be a big deal. 1 blue for an instant. Look at the top card of your library. You may put that card into your graveyard. Draw a card. This is Opt, but has Surveil instead, which is 99% of the time better than
bottom library.
Scry.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, this is a big deal because it's... You're combining what you would get out of an Opt and out of a Thought Scour, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a hybrid of those two. And I think the reality is Thought Scour has been one of the most played blue cantrips ever printed. And
so is Opt, right? Like,
yeah, Opt is very well loved. So this to me feels like the perfect hybrid. And I'm very excited about this. Putting cards in the bottom of my library, and it was never something I gave much of a damn about.
Yeah, I think like the only decks that are really ever going to care are decks that were playing Opt and were also playing with Eldrazi. For whatever, like, you want your Emrakul to, but even then, like, you want your graveyard to exist, but you're playing Emrakul is like the only thing I can think of. Like, maybe, but even then, yeah, I don't see a world where Consider just isn't like straight up bonkers. And it's like even better now because Esper Reanimator lists, we'll talk about Faithful Mending in a second, and like how this also leads into the like more abilities for blue white decks to get cards into their graveyard. Yeah, I think Consider is really strong. The next card we're going to talk about is Otherworldly Gaze, a blue for an instant. Look at the top 3 cards of your library, put any number of them into your graveyard, and the rest back on top of your library in any order. Flashback, 1 blue. So there's a bunch of cards this kind of harks back to. One of them, and I'm like forgetting what it's called.
Wasn't there a card called Dream Twist from Innistrad?
Yes.
They want to use mill 3 and then it flashed back, so it's a total of mill 6.
So, like, Dream Twist has seen Modern play, definitely a standard player, has seen kind of a library of different play in the past. And this card is just a strictly better version of Dream Twist because you can opt as part of that. You can scry some cards and make sure, like, oh, of the top 3, these are 2 Vengevines I would like to be in my graveyard. These are 2 Phoenixes I would like to be in my graveyard. But that last one is a card I would like to cast on my turn. So you can, like, pretty efficiently get stuff into your graveyard. There was, like, a whole controversy on this card because some people think it's, like, really good and some people think it's stone cold unplayable. I'm leaning towards the more it's, like, on the primary side. I don't think it's really, really good. But I think this is, like, a card that I would look out for. You know, flashback for 2 triggers a lot of different things. The fact that this is really easy to cast with Phoenix and make Phoenixes get to your graveyard is really important. It feeds your graveyard for Delve spells or Vengevines or whatever you want. It just seems like a very efficient for 3 mana. You get 6 cards in your graveyard. But of those 6, you get to keep the best 2 of them or best 4 of them or the best whatever and stack the top of your deck over your next 2 turns, which I think is really strong.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with you on that. I do think this is pretty good. Historically in blue, when cards don't actually put anything into your hand, they let you choose from what's on top. They're not very good, But I'm willing to take a chance on this one and say that I would recommend this card as being good rather than garbage.
Yeah, I think the difference, the small difference here with those cards, because I agree, if this was one mana, do that, it would be bad. The fact that this is one mana, you draw a two mana version of this card and you get to choose what you're drawing on your next turn, I think is good.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. I think, and that's part of it. And the fact that you can cast it from your graveyard is helpful too. Like, there's always like a need for grasping good stuff from your graveyard in these types of decks. And a card, the amount of times I've wanted cards in a Vengevine deck, or any type of self mill deck that let me mill more from my graveyard, right? Just like what more cards in my graveyard that let me continue my engine, has been very large. And Otherworldly Gaze gives you that ability. The next card is Secrets of the Key, blue to investigate. If this spell is cast from your graveyard, investigate twice instead. Flashback, 3 and a blue. We talked about this card before, in an early episode when we were first kind of responding to some of the previews. I did want to bring up that, because people did comment then, that the, like, we said it was comparable to Think Twice, right? Where And like, it plays a little bit in that world where turn one, you play this, turn two, you can keep your mana open. It's an instant, so the whole time you have your mana open and you're able to sack the clue token or have a clue token in play for artifact shenanigans and then cast other spells. On turn four or late game, you can hold up Cryptic Command. And then when they pass, you can just flashback this and then you have things in play. So it like is a slower engine than Think Twice is, but you draw a lot more cards, right? You're drawing three cards versus two, which is significant. The other thing, though, is that one of the most played decks in the format at the moment is Indomitable Creativity decks. So for those who don't know, Indomitable Creativity is X red, red, red sorcery mythic from Kaladesh. Destroy X target artifacts and or creatures. For each permanent destroyed this way, its controller reveals cards from the top of his or her library until an artifact or creature card is revealed and exiles that card. Those players put the exile cards onto the battlefield, then shuffle their library. So this is a card that lets you get Emrakul, Volumachus, etc. into play and let you kind of chain these effects. And they're already playing Hard Evidence, which for one mana gets you a crab and a clue token. This is another like convenient way to get that token, right? You don't get a blocker, but you also get more cards over the process and you get the ability to flash it back if they're able to respond or bounce or whatever to your clue token.
Yeah, one of my estimations of this card that when we talked about it last time was I was saying that it's really cool, and I think the thing about it that really makes it stand out is anytime you have like more permanents, more types of permanents, like, if, you know, whether it's you're talking about creatures coming into play, tokens, you're talking about clues, you know, treasures, anything like that, there is always a way to take advantage of that, whether it's like, you know, gaining life whenever artifacts come into play, creating metalcraft, like there's just a million different things. So I really like this card because I think it allows you to trigger prowess a couple times and also gives you resources. I think this card's sweet.
Yep. Next card is Turn the Earth. Green, instant, choose up to three target cards in graveyards. The owners of those cards shuffle them into their libraries. You gain two life. Flashback, one and a green. This is really similar to the blue-green card that has flashback that I'm forgetting the name of, so I'm going to look it up.
Journey... The one from Innistrad.
Yeah. Memory
Lapse? No, it's not.
Memory's Journey. One in a blue instant, target player shuffles up to three target cards from his or her graveyard into his or her library. Flashback, one green. This has the reverse, so the one side is the graveyard hate. The power of that card often is not only the fact that you can use it as random graveyard hate, right? It's that it allows you to pick cards in your graveyard that maybe you want back in your deck, be it a Thassa's Oracle, or like you've milled yourself all the way and you want to get that combo. It also is a good response to Thassa's Oracle. People are talking about this in CDH as an option just because it's like good graveyard hate, good at killing a Thassa Oracle combos when they're going off and murdering a player, etc., etc. And then the fact that you can gain two life is also like a stabilized engine. Once again, in the Otherworldly Gaze decks that are self-milling themselves, being able to gain life and sustain yourself is really important. And so this also gives even that much extra utility to those decks.
I'll tell you one thing that's really interesting, and we don't really talk about Highlander Gauntlet on the show very often anymore, but it's a format that we used to play a whole bunch of where you had 600 cards between six decks. And, you know, you could only use one copy of any card in the deck. So we started to realize that when we were building these decks that had to be basically tuned against the field, you need to have answers. And a lot of the key things you have to be able to disrupt are you need to be able to gain life. So you can't just get like burned out. Like nobody can mono red you. You have to be able to respond instantly to graveyards because that's like something that's always going to be a thing that you have to do in Magic. You need to be able to naturalize stuff. Like you have to have, but nobody ever wants to waste slots in their deck on cards that just do that one thing.
Right.
So anytime I see a card like this, I'm always like, this is just making, it's making a card that you're going to see it in a pack and be like, yeah, this is probably going to be useful. It captures two of the like three or four most important reactions that you need to be able to have in Magic. Gaining life and also shuffling cards away. It's pretty powerful, actually. Yep. They didn't use the print cards that had nearly as many bells and whistles in this sense, or you could do multiple things with the one card.
Saving your things in your graveyard, eating things in your opponent's graveyard, triggering flashback or spell-based bonus effects, gaining two life, and being able to discard this for an effect later are all things that I look at as a powerful card. One of the reasons I love flashback, right? And this card seems really sweet, and I can imagine it seeing play. I don't know if it'll like out of the gate see play. Endurance obviously is like a competitor for what this card is doing, but yeah. I think in the long run, you're going to see Turn the Earth like randomly show up in different sideboards and or main decks all over the place. And or it'll be a part of some combo in the long run. Like it's the right mana cost for it to be in some like weird, I'm not playing any lands or like some other weird important piece to a combo deck that people are making work. Cathodic Pyre, one and a red, instant, choose one. Cathodic Pyre deals 3 damage to target creature or planeswalker, or discard up to 2 cards, then draw that many cards, instant. So in many ways, this is just the better version of Izzet Charm.
Yeah, I mean, so the whole damage to creature or planeswalker thing, it is like a newer development. It all started that they had to be so careful with the keywords on these cards back when they got rid of, when they errated the whole thing of like damage to a player is the same as damage to a planeswalker.
Sure.
They changed that ruling. So then you end up getting cards like this. It's kind of the same thing with like a Braid, you know, where you read it and you're like, oh, this is sweet. Like what would be really sweet is if I could also hit a player with this, because this is assuming that 3 damage, you know,
well, but
you're going to want it.
Its fail case is always just like discard 2 card or discard 3 cards, draw 2 cards, right? Or discard 2 cards, draw 1 card.
Yeah.
If 3 damage to target creature or planeswalker isn't happening, you do that. Now, I think you only play this card in decks that that mode, the discard up to 2 cards, then draw that many cards, is the primary mode, right? Like you play this in decks like Phoenix where, oh, I can do that half every time. And then some of the time this is like, oh, right, I need to kill that opponent's thing. Here's 3 damage to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same as the last card we talked about. The versatility is what makes it.
Right.
And it is definitely playable. I'm not going to argue there.
Yeah. I think the fail case of doing damage to a player like a Braid matters a lot less. Like a Braid's one of the most played red 2 mana damage spells of all time. Right. And this,
yeah.
The fact that this is close to a Braid level as a power level is significant. I think it is a reason it's worth talking about. All right, the next card, and maybe one of the most played cards out of the gate in Modern and every format, is Faithful Mending. White, blue, instant. You gain 2 life, draw 2 cards, then discard 2 cards. Flashback, 1 white and a blue.
This card's good, man. This card's really good.
It has 1 extra mana. It's 2 colors, neither of them red, but it gains you 2 life. This just enables the annoying thing I have about this card is this card is so good as is, which just like puts the final nail in the coffin that like Faithless Looting was too good and should have been gone a while ago. Right. It's like, oh, if Faithless Looting was gold, not even in red, in white, one of the colors that needs this the least, and you just like added 2 life gain to it, it would be just as good.
Yeah,
fine.
Agreed. I mean, this card's very powerful. I've seen this in a bunch of deck lists already, and
but single-handedly, this plus consider has like brought Phoenix back, right? Like immediately, Phoenix is once again 5-0ing tournaments. Esper Reanimator, this is like the exact piece that deck was missing to be able to be viable. Dredge is already looking at ways to incorporate white cards into its strategy that it previously wasn't really playing. It's like already out of the gate doing cool stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that Faithless Looting effect, I think we probably all knew what was happening, but maybe none of us really acknowledged that was a like pretty unique thing. Like, there had only been one version of that card that had existed, and it was in blue, and it wasn't in Modern. So I think the fact that we now have this again is like, okay, I'll pay an extra mana for it. Like, and, my whole deck was built around this.
And the flashback is important. I think people like really misunderstood or understood, like, oh, the fact that Faithless Looting could draw into a Faithless Looting and then discard a Faithless Looting was really powerful, right? So by playing four of these, you can get rid of the other ones because they're in your graveyard now, and being able to flash them back is so powerful. I'm excited to do like Esper Reanimator. I'm excited to do Esper, like take Mardu Aristocrat or Mardu Mardu Pyromancer, and like see if you can come up with a Jeskai Pyromancer or even just like get rid of the Pyromancer and do Esper Pyromancer, but use like the witch that makes pest tokens for 3 mana.
Right.
I think there's like really cool stuff you can do with this card. I'm really excited that there is a replacement for Faithless Looting within Faithful Mending.
Yeah, watching the results already on this card makes me think this might end up just being the best card in the set. It does kind of seem like that's the direction we're going.
Yeah, I think like it and Consider are really like the only two cards I would say are in super contention for best card of the set, especially for Modern. I'm like looking at any other cards we will be talking about.
There's a few cards that we talked about on last week's episode. Like there's a couple, but maybe, I think we were both pretty sure.
Maybe Meat Hood Massacre. But yeah, I think I agree. I think that's like this is pretty hands down close. Consider just like Opt is already a staple of Modern, right? And like Consider just a replacement that's better. Where like Faithful Mending.
Renin 7 is a big one.
I don't think Renin 7 is close to these two cards.
Fair enough.
Fateful Absence, 1W, instant, destroy target creature or planeswalker. Its controller investigates. Instant. Hmm. So, Path to Exile variant. It costs 2 mana. They don't get a land. They get a clue token. Clue tokens are significantly worse than land tokens.
Yeah, I mean they have to pay 2 mana to get a card. You're taxing. You're getting draw a card for 2 mana, but I just got rid of your planeswalker for 2. That's the trade-off. White's always had with cards like. You know, you either don't get rid of the thing entirely or there's heavy restrictions. So you're talking about like Sunlands or you're talking about like Hell is the card I'm thinking of. 1W attacking creature, put it 3rd from the top. Oust, maybe it's called.
Sure. I think that this card is like definitively better than Terminate. Partially because it's only one color, right? And like, so it can go in way more decks than Terminate can. And the fact that that's true. The biggest count against this to me is Prismatic Ending existing. Right. Is
yeah,
like,
I mean, that card's become so heavily played and this is not as good as Prismatic Ending.
I don't know if it's not as good. Like, it's not as good up against 2 mana, 1 mana and maybe 3 mana spells. Maybe. But instant speed is better at 3 mana for sure. And then anything above that, this is a better card. Right. Like, I would much rather spend 2 mana to kill a planeswalker or creature than 4 mana to kill a 4 mana creature.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, Prismatic Ending definitely has its restrictions, but it's a little more scalable, right? Because doesn't Prismatic Ending hit more than just creatures or planeswalkers?
It hits any non-land permanent.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So
enchantments and artifacts? Like, sure.
Yeah, I think that the ability to actually handle multiple different things is pretty strong. And this is, you know, this is just a removal spell, a classic creature. Mostly creature moves. But I don't know. This card's good, though.
One of the fail cases is also destroying your own creature, right? Like the old Path to Exile Wall of Omens trick, and then you just get the investigate token,
right?
If you need to, or do that to Snapcaster Mage if you're just not drawing into what you need. Prismatic Ending just like is more versatile. I think they're comparable. I think Prismatic Ending is better, but I think Faithful Absence has a home in decks to play both alongside each other.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's like that same thing I used to do when I would Pondrify my own creatures, or I guess now Rapid Hybridization my own creatures to get like a 3/3 on turn 1.
Mm-hmm. Next card is Geist Wave. 1W, instant, return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. If you controlled that permanent, draw a card.
I think this card's really good. This is one of my favorite variations on this I've seen.
Yeah, like already like things that benefit, and this is a CDH, like the start, right? The valuation in CDH, this card's bonkers because the ability to target something like a Dockside Extortionist allows you to kind of loop it in a way. So like itself, like Snap, for instance, is a CDH staple because it's a great thing to target your own things and your opponent's things as removal. And this plays in that space. So then the fact that it's good there, like that's vintage level power levels. So how is this applicable to modern. And I do think there's enough cards, like Wall Moment said before, or even some planeswalkers that are about to be killed by your opponent. Like, the ability to counter your opponent's removal and draw a card is really strong. And then it's just the versatile removal spell at other times, being able to bounce your opponent's planeswalker, being able to pounce a big token or whatever. So I think this card's really powerful.
Yeah, I also could see there's a lot of decks that I think would consider using this card. You know, things that have like a lot of ETB triggers, like you mentioned. But I mean, even if you were to take something like humans, like I could see humans playing two copies of this card. It could be the difference between getting one blocker out of the way to win the game, or it also could be the difference between, you know, bouncing your Thalia's Lieutenant back to your hand in response, drawing a card. Now you replay it the next turn, you get the counter on every creature. You know, like it's just, this card does a lot for not very much. It's pretty unique, actually.
Yep. Agreed.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
The next card we're going to talk about is Rite of Harmony. Green and a white for an instant. Whenever a creature or enchantment enters the battlefield under your control this turn, draw a card. Flashback. Two green and a white. So we've had this in blue, green, and modern. On the ban list is this for just one green. A creature enters the battlefield is something to always look at. The blue-green one was always in a weird spot because there was no reason to ever play blue-green elves. Add that right to, like, it's just like one mana expensive. Like, is two mana really like good enough? But green white elves, there is a reason to play white and elves, right? There's a lot of really easy ways you can get around having green and white in the deck. Not to mention like Abzan, right? Like, that's the other classic version of the deck. And so this goes into the colors really well. The blue green version of this, which I will look up in the middle of me talking about.
Oh, it's called Beck and Call.
Beck and Call has, like, Beck has the call half, which is for a blue and a white and four, put 4/1/1 white blue creature tokens for, and you can fuse them and play both. That's also not a thing like elves really wants. Being able to flash this back though is insane. Like, from the perspective of, I have played elves in Legacy where they have access to what's the card? What's the green one? The one green one?
Oh, Glimpse of Nature.
Which is on the banned list. Glimpse of Nature. The fact that they have access to Glimpse of Nature and Legacy, like, makes elves a deck that often ends in the draw bracket because there's no way to stop them. You could, like, wipe the board. I Terminus'd elves 4 times in a match, and every single turn it was like, they would go for it, I would Terminus. They would go for it, I would Terminus. And it was just, like, a nightmare. And because they would just, like, redraw their hand every time. And the fact that if they, like, do it the first time and they have a fail, they could just cast the flashback half later when they have enough mana for it, is, like, so much resilience to elf decks that I'm, like, surprised this card isn't being talked about more often.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, the thing you mentioned about the four flashback, at that point you have so much mana anyway that it doesn't really matter that it costs four. You're just trying to keep the you know, engine rolling. And being able to do that twice in a turn just from this one card is a pretty big game. I was also trying to remember if Avacyn's Pilgrim...
It's a human.
It's a human model.
Yeah, there are no elves or goblins on Innistrad.
Gotcha. So yeah, that makes sense. Because I was going to say either that or Hierarch could both be good in the deck.
Yeah. There are none of the main, well, I guess Merfolk goblins and elves are not on Innistrad. Zombies and vampires are, and humans. But yeah. So I think like if you untap with an Archdruid and like two other mana dork elves and you have this in your graveyard, you probably can go off. And then obviously the front half is like easy to go off. I think there's like easy ways to take advantage of this card and adds like a real win condition to elves, just being able to combo ball elves people, which is great.
Next card we got is Siphon Insight. It is black blue for an instant. Look at the top two cards of target opponent's library, exile one of them face down and put the other on the bottom of that library. You may look at it and play the exiled card for as long as it remains exiled, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast the spell. It flashes back for blue, black, one.
So my favorite thing to do with this is anytime anyone puts anything on top of their deck on purpose, be it with a Preordain or some type of scry effect, you can then cast this to steal whatever they kept. Obviously, in older formats, being able to respond to Vampiric Tutors and Enlightened Tutors and Mystical Tutors with Siphon of Insight is like going to be the best feeling I can imagine.
Right.
For modern, being able to respond to a Jace trigger, like if they brainstorm some things on top of their deck, is really strong. But also just like two mana draw card, three mana, like in that think twice space, but you're getting your opponent's best cards and you're getting to opt, basically, or getting a look at the top two cards and then choose the best one of those two, is also like kind of gangbusters. I like kind of really like this card.
Here's my only issue with this card. I know they're different, and I know this card has flashback, and so it does some really interesting things defensively, but look, let's be honest, we've all wanted Shadow of Doubt to be the best card ever for the longest time. We all love that card, but it doesn't actually feel like if you main deck Shadow of Doubt, you actually get to use it the way you want to use it that often, even though in theory there are tons and tons of fetch lands getting searched for, other tricks that you're going to be able to just shred people with. And I always find that when I play Shadow of Doubt in the main deck of any reactive deck, it gets used for its proper purpose, not even 50% of the time at best.
But like Shadow of Doubt is just like cantripping. I think looking at your opponent's two best cards, I think brainstorming your opponent and getting the best of those two cards, not preordaining your opponent, is better than random draw a card. I guess it depends on the deck, of course, because sometimes you just have better cards in your deck than your opponent has in theirs. But against some matchups, right, you get really dope stuff.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, I think it's more powerful than Shadow of Doubt, but I just still think about the magical Christmas land theory of how this card is good. And in a powerful format, like the ones that we like to play, where there's not actually as many, like Modern doesn't have nearly as many put something on top of your library.
Sure. Agreed.
It has a lot less of that.
That's why in Modern, I think the Shadow of Doubt comparison is less than in the older formats where you're trying to get someone who's just tutored, right? You're playing this card because most of the time it's a great instant speed way to spend your turn stealing the best card from your opponent.
Right.
In other formats, you're playing it because that's true, and then also you can just have this in your graveyard as a graveyard deck, and then your opponent Vampiric Tutors and you're like, nope. So I think that's the next benefit. But yeah, that's fair. I think it'll be interesting to see if it sees play.
For sure.
Next card is Bloodline Calling. One black instant. Target creature gets -5 until end of turn, -5/-5, or target token get or creature tokens get -2/-2 until end of turn.
Funny, we were just talking about Parrish. This is another variation on Parrish. Look, I'll ask the same question now that I asked then. Creature tokens getting -2/-2 for three is not playable, but having three mana -5/-5, that's pretty big. We actually don't see -5/-5 out of black cards really that often. It's almost always -4/-4 is the big, that's the big swingy one that black always shows us, or sort of conditions us to believe. So a singular, three mana probably nuke something, and it also means it can nuke a lot of things that become 5/5s that are harder to deal with, I believe Gideon becomes a 5/5, right? 5/5 indestructible, or is it even 6/6?
Gideon is I think some have been 5/5s and some have been 6/6, and it depends.
A lot of the time, you'll see Nissa or one of those others turn the planeswalker turn into a 4/4 or a 5/5. So I think this card's actually probably better than it's getting credit for. I don't know that there's a deck that really needs a three mana destroy a creature thing. Yeah,
I think the three mana effect really hurts it for me. I think the fact that I would play the Meat Hook Massacre almost most of the time, though, if there becomes a moment where there are X5s that are really important to kill, right? And on the same time, a deck that has maybe a lot of X2 tokens, this card becomes more interesting. But until that happens, I don't know if this card is, it's just a little too slow.
Yep.
Yeah. Next card, Memory Deluge. Two blue instant. Look at the top X cards of your library where X is the amount of mana spent to cast the spell. So the first time, four cards. Put two of them into your hand and the rest in the bottom of your library in random order. Flashback for 7. So instant speed, filter for the top four, get two cards, or flashback for seven later on in the game and get look at the top seven and get the two. So it has dig through time-esque ramifications if you spend the seven mana for it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Dig Through Time being a delve card is why it was played. And so I don't...
Two mana is significantly better than seven.
and you can't cheat. You can't really cheat this card. That's the issue. You know, like, you can... If you pay four to look at the top four and put two into your hand, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Having flashback to do it for seven, also fine. But, like, very expensive. Like, blue decks are almost always going to be more efficient than needing these casting costs. This, like, doesn't feel like it's actually reflective of where the format is at all.
Yeah, I mean, it in the blue, I mean, like, blue-white is doing very well right now, right? Like, that is one of the best decks in the format at the moment. And having a card that, like, plays well with Archmage's Charm and Cryptic Command, like, they're playing Fact of Fiction, right? Like, and that's what this card would compare to, is, like, a Fact of Fiction effect. And is this card better than Fact of Fiction is the real question to me.
Fact or Fiction.
Fact or Fiction, okay. Sorry. That makes sense because Fact of Fiction is terrible to say. is this card comparable or better than Foth? And it might be. Like, digging for four to draw three cards, one of which is a seven mana dig for seven, dig through seven to get two cards, is a lot of cards that you get to see for the best two cards, and you get to select them. It happens at instant speed. Is that better than drawing... You know, the Foth game, as much as Foth is fun, right? Like, that's a different issue on its own. But, like, I get to put a pile in front of you. You get to separate those two cards into two piles, and I get to pick the best of those two piles. So the best 40% of the cards you see, I guess, would be how I'd refer to it, versus Memory Deluge, which finds the best two cards from your top four. It's kind of comparable.
I mean, I think this card's really good. You know, Foth sees five, not four, for four mana. Doesn't have flashback, though.
But you are likely to not get the best two cards from those five, right?
You almost always are going to take the worst version that has three because they give you a bunch of lands.
Like, you're going to either get the best 1.5 and then the worst.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... First of all, not a lot of decks in Modern, I think, have been playing Fact of Fiction for a while. I think it's good, but I don't think it's like the most beloved modern card.
I mean, blue white X control is currently the most played deck in the format at the top table, 6.4% of the metagame, and they generally run at least one Fact of Fiction.
Right. So, I mean, that's like a one of. So I'm trying to think of, like, you know, does this replace the one of in those decks?
I'm saying it might, like, especially because, like, those decks also have, like, Shark Typhoon. So, like, you can have Shark Typhoon in play and then, like, late game when you've drawn it out long enough, cast this for seven and get a 7/7 shark.
I think also probably the other thing that maybe works in favor of this card is that I think those decks often get to a slow grind late where they actually have way more mana than they know to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And so just having this available to you in longer games, it probably depends on the speed of the format is what you can justify playing this or not. And that probably is more of a meta call if blue-white is playable, if the format's extremely aggressive. Because, yeah,
Standard players, the fact that we're considering Memory Deluge comparable to Foth, which is one of the best card draw spells in blue of all time, tells you how good this card could be. Now, Foth has not seen a lot of play in Modern, to Ben's point. It just only recently really started seeing play as one of the better instant speed card draw engines. And this is of that level. That's kind of, I think, why people are talking about it, is I do think this is Foth comparable. You get the best two cards plus a bad seven version of this spell that if you're able to draw the game out, so you have the ability to cast for seven mana at instant speed because your opponent just didn't do anything that turn because you're holding Cryptic Command up or Archmage Charm, so they, like, don't want to play a spell into it, and you're able to cast Memory Deluge, get your next two Archmage's Charms. Like, how does your opponent ever come back from this card being cast twice?
Yeah, that is true. It's definitely a tremendous amount of advantage.
Before you jump into sorceries, make sure to check out battlebosses.com. If you see this boss, this is a game I made. Ben helped in a lot of the development of it as well. You can get all these different bosses. This is Nightmare. That was Captain Boat. And you, it plays kind of like Magic meets a tower defense game. It's really, really, really cool. And it's out as we speak. If you buy it, also Marshall, one of the editors of the podcast, was one of the main playtesters. Helped even come up with some of the bosses. He helped come up with the gameplay for Captain Boat, and was the original person like, "Hey, we should do a pirate ship tribe." So yeah, check it out. And now we're going to talk about sorceries.
Yes.
Grawl from the Cellar. Black sorcery. Return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. Put a +1/+1 counter on up to one target zombie you control. Flashback 3 and a black. Now, I think the issue with this card is that it requires a zombie to be in play, correct? To cast it, or you don't need it? You don't need to have targets for both things.
Play +1/+1 on up to one up target to one. Zombie you control.
So if that's not true, then getting the ability to flashback for a 3 and a black to get a zombie into, like, get anything from your graveyard is, like, a thing, right? Like, there aren't a lot of in modern playable buyback cards for that amount. There's, like, you could just cast like full-on reanimation flashback spells theoretically, but you don't have the one mana option of being able to buy stuff back as, like, a playable version of this effect. So close. I think it just is missing it. I think, like, if this was 3 mana and it didn't have the second effect, this could be modern playable. Or, like, there are decks in the long run that might want to see a deck like this that are able to mill themselves and then get cards back from their graveyard. I think it just misses it.
Yeah, I think a 4 on the backside of it is just a little too much. There's just more efficient ways to gain value than this.
All right. Can't Stay Away. And just, like, peak kitty artwork with a little ghost kitty eating meat and a bunch of little other cat friends. White and a black sorcery. Return target creature card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. It gains if this creature would die, exile it instead. Flashback 3 white black. Now, this is closer to something that has seen play multiple times in Modern's history.
Yeah, this is pretty sweet. I mean, CMC 3 or less to the battlefield and flashing back for 5. I mean, you could be playing...
That's Tumor Superions.
Trust me, I'm excited. you could be playing this card right alongside... God, I'm so bad with card names these days. My memory has rotted away. White, green, white. The 3/2 creature that when it came in with Revolt, you would found something with 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Oh.
Renegade Rallier, yeah. So, like, I mean, if you put Renegade Rallier into play off of this card with a fetch land, then Renegade Rallier comes in and gets grab something else.
Yep, true. The thing with all these cards is always you're able to get, like, things that, like, have weird, like, costs associated with them, right? Like the Scab Ruinator side of the world.
Yeah, yep.
That, like, is always really interesting. The fact that you can have this be self-milled and get stuff back is also really good. I think, like there's a, like, you know, Unearth has already seeing some amount of play in decks, and this plays in that space. Being able to get, like, Kroxa and put into play. The sad thing with Kroxa is that this exiles it when it dies, so you can't, like, so you escape it. I think that's, like, I think that's what's going to limit it from seeing play, is if this could get Kroxa back, this would be a great card, because it could be another thing that you can discard to stuff that late game you gain more advantage of, etc. And I think it just is missing that factor. But I do think this is a card to keep. Like, if there is a time where there's another really good creature that, like, for some reason is hard to cast from your hand, but if you use this spell to put it into play, you can get into play really easily. This card skyrockets in playability.
Yeah, I mean, I like what you're mentioning. This card does interact really nicely with a lot of those cards that would always be considered for the, you know, cheat them into play because you can't cast them properly world, like you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Whether Superior or Scab, like Ruinator or anything like that, there's, I think, probably a place for this. You mentioned Unearth already, though, and Unearth only costing 1 and also having the cycling on it is pretty big. But then again, this flashing back later in the game is also enormously, like, very, very, very good.
Right.
Like, this makes... Like, this flashing back kind of makes me feel like...
It just costs 5 to do it. Is it's like,
I know, but what, like, hurts, but, like, me. If I'm playing the Superior deck, like, if I actually am doing that, and I'm just looking to constantly get value, the single spell that returns Superior from graveyard to play, so, like, let's say you're playing Ojitai's Command, mm-hmm. or let's say you're playing, like, Renegade Rallier, those are cards that you're going to only, like, you're going to play them one time in conjunction with the thing you're trying to cheat into play, and then that ability that they have is gone forever. Whereas this one, if you cast it early to get your cheat creature into play, and the game keeps going, having this flashing back for five in your graveyard means that you don't have to overload your deck with enablers to make those bad creatures work, because you're going to be able to use this one later in the game when you happen to draw top deck Superion.
Right.
You know, you don't know what to do with it. You have something in play that allows you to put it in your graveyard. Now, like, this thing just gets that into play. I mean, I guess the answer there is don't play Mirror Superior, because you'd like to just be able to cast your top deck. But, like, I do think.
And it's bad. I think the place that I finish your sentence.
I just think, like, if you have a deck that's getting Scabrunator into play, let's say you're playing this alongside the new Faithful Mending, and you, like, turn two, put Ruinator in your graveyard off the draw, discard, and then, like, turn three, cast this holding open counter magic kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, you're playing a control deck with a beefy creature they have to deal with. They have to kill it. And if they do, two turns later, you just play it out of your graveyard again. It just has a piece already stapled to it.
And that's one of the things that's interesting for me is I think it's really good with Lurrus as well, right? Like, because you can cast Lurrus from your graveyard. So it lets you rebuy your Lurrus if they kill it somehow. And, like, the card that also is really is, like, Dwathi Voidwalker, right? Like cards that, like, are great when you sacrifice them and then you get to rebuy them, I think is really powerful. Not to mention just being able to get Ragavans back or Dragon Rage Channeler cards that Dragon Rage Channeler milled. Like, there's stuff that gets it back that's pretty well. It sucks that it doesn't work really well with Kroxa, but it does work with everything else around a Kroxa deck. And playing that as a one of over maybe the, like, one Unearth or as, like, just a supplement to Unearth is maybe powerful enough.
Yeah, agreed. I like it.
All right, next card is Ghoul Caller's Harvest. Green, black, sorcery, X. Create X 2/2 black zombie creature tokens with Decayed, where X is half the number of creature cards in your graveyard, rounded up. So if you have 10 creatures, you get five zombie tokens, right? For 2 mana. So I think, and then it has flashback for 5, right? 3 green, black. This card is close. The fact that for 2 mana, you can get 10, like, easily get 10 power into play or more that's hard to block is, like, really strong. And a deck like a Vengevine mill deck, where, like, this also can be in your graveyard as a late game win condition, where there's versions of decks where like you cast this on turn 5 and you get 20 power worth of power in play, right? Yeah. Like, having 10 creatures in your graveyard you need 40 creatures in your graveyard to get you need 20. Having 20 creatures in your graveyard is not unheard of in decks, right? It's hard to accomplish, but, like, even getting, like, you, it's a power per creature, right? So, like, 20 power is only 20 creatures. 10 power is 10 creatures. So I think that's a lot of damage for a spell that you can cast from your graveyard and is pretty redundant. And that doesn't include the, like, turn 5 cast or turn 4 cast this for green and black after you've mulched or whatever to mill yourself, get 5 power, and then turn 5 cast it again for another 5 tokens, right? And so now you have that 20
in
play.
It's a lot of value, and especially in a self-mill deck. It's just a lot of value, period.
Like, and there's, like, a lot of cards that are just, like, pointing to that deck being more possible. Like, those old Dredgevine style lists before, like, the Hogak era or the Hollowed One era of Vengevine, when it was, like, just unplayable. There are a bunch of tools now from this set that make it just that much closer to maybe be possible.
I think also, like, this in a blue deck, you know, in a Sultai deck with Snapcaster is probably a pretty good idea. I think that's pretty good.
Yep, just like for 4 mana, get a bunch of creatures back.
Just flashing it back for 4. It's pretty good. Also, because, like, there are a lot more things that return a creature to your hand than a spell to your hand. There are tons of things that return a creature to your hand. So I feel like you would probably play a big blue self-mill deck with Snapcasters and this. But you need to have creatures, obviously, for the thing to be valuable. So having 4 Snapcasters in your graveyard, like, honestly, it's almost like Sultai and then, you know, play Unearth in that deck.
Sure.
And, right, like you almost can combine the ideas we were just talking about with Can't Stay Away and apply a lot of those ideas to Ghoul Caller's Harvest, and there's a bunch of self-mill versions of this deck that, yeah, you go bonkers pretty fast, pretty early.
Right.
Card's really good.
Next card we're going to talk about is Join the Dance. Green, white, create 2 white and 1 white human creature tokens. Flashback, 3 green and white. This is feels like fixed Lingering Souls. 2 mana on the front half is fine. I think this is just worse than Lingering Souls, though. Like, as much as I want it to be Lingering Souls, I think they were smart to not just give me Lingering Souls.
Yeah, I would agree.
Next card, Sunset Revelry. One in a white sorcery. If an opponent has more life than you, gain 4 life. If an opponent controls more creatures than you, create 2/1/1 white human creature tokens. If an opponent has more cards in hand than you, draw a card.
This seems like timely reinforcements, right?
This is exactly like timely reinforcements. I think this like is just straight up a staple in modern. I think this is on the list of, because like timely reinforcements has been like playable consistently through modern's history as a sideboard card. You gain 6 life versus 4 life, which is like 2 burn spells versus 1.5 burn spells. You gain 2 creatures versus 3 creatures, but for 2 mana, right? They're like way less mana than 3. 3 mana is a lot of mana in modern. 2 mana is not that much, especially because like consider like Snapcaster Mage also lets you rebuy it. And it cantrips.
Yeah.
Like it just adds the draw card effect on top of all of that. I think this card's really bonkers.
I do think that there's a possibility that you'll get 2 of these when you play it a lot of the time. You'll be forced to play it. You won't be able to maximize its effect. So then it becomes 2 mana for 2 of these abilities. Because if each one refers to a different condition,
I still think that's fine, though. I think this card's good.
Yeah, but I also can
see
being in a situation where you have as many cards or more cards than them because they've drawn gas in your land host, so you don't get to draw a card. You have more cards than them. You do gain 4 life because they're beating down on you, and
If you get 4 life and you get 2 tokens, this card is a modern staple. I think I think that card is better than timely reinforcements because it's at 2 mana versus 3.
Okay. Fair enough.
I think that adding the layer that once in a while, you're going to get just like a cantrip out of that is all just insane, right? I think that's kind of where I'm at. Now the question is timely reinforcements play right now is debatable, right? So like I think also playing this on 2 and you're on the play, you play a land, they play a land, they play Raghavan, and then you play this and then play this, right? Like you play a land and then play this and you just like get 2 tokens and like maybe gain life because they've attacked, I guess, not in that situation. But like even just getting 2 tokens for 1 and a white to like block the Raghavan is like really good to me.
It's a lot of value. There's no doubt that there's potential for a huge value swing when you play this card. I agree. I like it.
That part of the card is playable on its own, right? Like there are decks in modern that have tried making 1 and a white make 2 tokens work. They never made the case, and I don't think that's quite good enough. But then add these other things onto it in the late game, and it's like really strong. All right, next card. Tapping at the Window. 1 green sorcery. Look at the top 3 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest into your graveyard. Flashback 2 and a green. This is the mulch effect. The difference is that you get to flash it back, which is like something that I've always wanted mulch to be able to do.
Right. It's a little less good because mulch is the top 4 or is it top 5?
Well, mulch is the lands one, right? This is the green-black one from Innistrad that lets you get a land or a creature.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
So it's definitely different than those, right? But it also is good because you can play 4 of these, and if you hit one of these, it's still good because it goes to your graveyard, and you can now cast both of them from your graveyard so they can chain.
I think this card has some real potential to break through. I think there's a number of effects that do similar things. But having the flashback definitely pushes it into the conversation.
Right, like worst case scenario, this is a 1 mana more for both halves of that blue spell that we were talking about earlier, right?
Yes,
like,
exactly.
And in the meantime, it's better than that because you get creatures a lot of the time. Next card, Dryad's Revival. 2 and a green, return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. Flashback, 4 and a green.
So you're thinking sorcery speed, Gravedigger effect.
Well, any card.
It's target, not target land card. Gotcha. So it's 3 mana regrowth and then flashes back for 5.
Mm-hmm. Regrowth with the new land version of it has shown to be more playable than, you know, and like regrowth at one time was banned in Vintage, right? I mean, that was like a long time ago.
Yeah.
To me, what's interesting, this is the flashback side, right? Like now, kind of what we were talking about with the grave, the crawl from the cellar, the thing that you actually wanted was the ability to get anything from your graveyard, be it a reanimation spell,
a digging spell, a creature spell. Like, there's a bunch of stuff that self-mill graveyard decks are putting into the yard that just getting access to anything is such a leap above what they currently can grab their hands on that this helps them get there, right? You're now able to get the weird reanimation spell. You can get like marked grave if you want to get a specific card in your graveyard, or you can get persist out of your graveyard to play something, right? Like, it gives you a lot more resiliency and gets two cards out of it. It is five mana, which is a lot, though. I think this card you play like one of as like just a like resilience to interaction card or against control decks.
I mean, Eternal Witness has been played forever and ever and ever because it's good. And it's not like when you draw it later in the game. It's like often when you draw it later in the game, you don't care if it costs three or five. It's still good. And like that's why it's a good card. So having this in your graveyard for the second use is something that I think those value decks will get definitely a lot of use out of.
Right, right. Next card is, and there's a few misses from stuff that people mentioned we didn't talk about, and there's a few cards and sorceries that aren't in this list that I'm just gonna get Ben with. Dire Graph Rebirth, 3BG sorcery. This spell costs one less to cast for each creature that died this turn. Return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Flashback, 7. So 5 mana and 7 mana for Unburial Rites, right? So like worse than Unburial Rites, you need green and black. Better colors for Unburial Rites, right? Like green and black is where you want to be. But if you have any type of sacrifice engine, which specifically Hogak decks have, this is Hogak.
True.
Right? Like if you are playing with big things that have power and toughness, you can, or like anything you're sacking, if you use, like this is like a perfect card for the self-mill Altar of Dementia decks. Right? Because you're doing the altar thing. This is in your graveyard. You're able to rebuy a creature from your graveyard that buys maybe other creatures back. Maybe it puts a bunch of creatures into play. Like you get a Grave Titan or you get Sun Titan grabbing another thing, right? Like you're able to kind of regurgitate your graveyard back into play and loop that effect. And this gets put in your graveyard.
This is like the most Alex Kessler card that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm so
hyped. I read this card and I'm just like, I don't want to play against you when you're playing this. I'm not excited to play against you when you play this.
It's very easy for me to sack a bunch of creatures. Like for the front half, 3 creatures die and I now have, you know, a reanimate effect. Or not reanimate, I have an animate dead. In my graveyard, if I just happen to let 5 creatures die somehow, how could I ever in a black deck let creatures die? I now get to reanimate a thing. This card's fire. I love this card. And it's in better colors, right? Like the problem with Unburial Rites is that black and white don't always want to be doing this activity. Green and black do want to do this activity significantly more often.
I agree. I think this card's dope. I think this card will make an impact for sure.
Yep. I'm super hyped. I think the loop of having to get all your creatures to die is a real loop, right? Like this card is bad when you're not able to go off, but the fact that like Hogak decks with Altar of Dementia were able to do the thing so well, and Diagraph Rebirth with some like Vengevines in play can kind of continue that game on and get you some really big scary things is like really exciting to me. The next card, which is one of the misses that we had, which is Lear, Disciple of the Drowned. 3BG, legendary creature, human wizard for a 3/4. Spells can't be countered. Each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard has flashback. The flashback cost is equal to that card's mana cost. People are talking about this in Storm decks as like a sideboard option. Or just like a good, like, I played this creature and if I untap with it, I win. And you can't stop me if I untap with it unless you kill it. And it's a 3/4, which does dodge chunks of removal in the format as well as being a 5-drop. It is 5 mana though.
It is 5 mana, but I think it gives you a pretty hefty amount of range. There's a card called was a Lich from was it Dralnu Lich Lord?
Yep,
no.
Yep. Dralnu Lich Lord.
BG3 from, and it was, yeah, it was from like
3BG, power and toughness, whatever. You can tap it to give a card flashback, but if a permanent you control were to take damage, you had to sacrifice a permanent you control or something along those lines.
I think that's what it was. Yeah. It's from like Time Spiral, I think. But anyway, that's like kind of what it reminds me of. Just the idea that, you know, you get all this flashback out of your graveyard. This one's more powerful, obviously.
If damage were to be dealt to Dralnu Lich Lord, sacrifice that many permanents instead.
Yeah.
So that's exactly. Like a little heftier of a drawback, but yes. Yeah.
But it's kind of in the same wheelhouse, and I think this card's pretty good.
The difference is that Dralnu has to target one target instant or sorcery. This just lets you cast all. This is what's the red all spells in your graveyard have flashback? Pass in Flames. So three red, each instant sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback. So this has Pass in Flame vibes, right? I mean, it is closer to the back end, the five mana half, but like it also is a creature, so you don't have to cast it within the storm chain. You can just cast it, pass. If it survives, you win.
Yeah, I mean, it's very good. Like, right? Like, it gives you a crazy reach. It is funny in a blue deck that spells can't be countered, though. Like, this is the anti-counter magic card.
Spells do that. I've seen blue spells do that. I mean, like, in CDH, this card's already being obviously talked about, because, like, both halves are, like, really important in that format.
Right.
Like, Kess is really good in CDH because it lets you rebuy Demonic Consultation or Tainted Pact or any of your tutors, and this lets you do that as well and makes them uncounterable, which is like the main form of interaction in the format, and creature removal isn't as hefty, so I think it's really cool. All right, so that is there's only one more card for a set review, Ben, and then we'll be done.
It is Hostile. It's a land.
It's pronounced Hostile.
It is a land, tap to add one colorless. One and a tap, sacrifice a creature, put a soul counter on a hostile. Then if there are three or more soul counters on it, remove those counters, transform it, then untap it, activate only as a sorcery. Okay, so you have to sacrifice three creatures over several turns to flip it. Yep. And when it flips into Creeping In, which is an artifact creature horror construct. It's a 3/7. Whenever Creeping In attacks, you may exile a creature card from your graveyard. If you do, each opponent loses X life and you gain X life, where X is the number of creature cards exiled with Creeping In. Gotcha. And then you can phase it out for four colorless. Wow, what an interesting card.
Yeah.
A lot going on with this card.
So the first half is hostile, right? And that, to me, that like is like the closest we've ever gotten to like a high market effect in Modern, right? Like a pretty inexpensive, like two mana, sacrifice a creature, sorcery speed, so it can't be used to like respond to removal, which I do think makes it a lot worse. But being able to just have a sac outlet like that on your land is something that decks have often wanted, right? Like there's different reasons to want to be able to do that. And then on the other hand, when you flip it, it becomes a pretty impossible to kill threat that as it attacks helps you stabilize, is great at blocking, phases out, so really removal resistant as a control threat. So I think even on that side, it's really cool.
I think it's really awesome. It's one of the cards I've read so far that I've been most excited about. My only issue with this card is that I feel like I don't know, like sacrificing a creature at sorcery speed on my end for that much mana. Most control decks don't play a lot of creatures, right? So if you have like a bunch of tokens you can sacrifice, you have stuff like Wall of Omens or things like that, then you can get yourself into a situation where this is your finisher, because it's a good finisher.
Yeah.
It is, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really good finisher. But I feel like the condition to have creatures in play to sacrifice, there are some control decks that know how to take advantage of that, but that hasn't been something that I would say is like consistently a big piece of control.
Yeah, you want to be playing like Snapcaster Mages and Wall of Omens and like playing like a weird version of a like deck that sacks creatures and is doing this, which I think is a challenge, but if you can do that, I think it's really good.
Also, the fact that the ability is only at sorcery speed hurts it in a control deck.
Yeah, I think Mardu Pyromancer to me is actually the deck I think it's more interesting in, right? Or like Mardu Pyromancer esque decks now that they're gonna maybe play
three
blue-white.
do three color decks really want to rely on having a colorless producing land?
I don't know if you have to be three colors, right? Like a black red sacrifice, like there's that Jund list that's been around that's playing Lurrus, and you're doing the like playing with the mana dork, and you're playing with the new Jund one, and you're playing with Dwathi Voidwalkers and Ragavan Dragonrage Channeler and Lurrus and that kind of stuff, where you're able to like sack and then gain the effect back by recasting it with Lurrus, like that kind of stuff, I think is like maybe an interesting thing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's worlds of like people playing, what's the red black Mayhem Devil, right? That's the,
yeah.
Right,
yeah. Mayhem. That's the one.
Yeah. The black red, the Jund sacrifice decks where you're playing Bloodghasts and Mayhem Devils and Seasoned Pyromancers and Kroxas and Ragavans and Ignoble Hierarchs, Bloodhall Ooze, Renin 6, Grist. Like with Grist, this card's really good, right? Like the closer to like Jund sacrifice Goblin Bombardment decks, I think this card's really cool. And
yeah, agreed. Again, I do worry in any three color deck, but you just play it as a spell, not as a land. That's how you have to play this card.
Yeah. And it like the fact that they're playing a Noble Hierarch helps there, right? Like you're able to kind of go above that,
balance it out. Yeah.
But yeah, as like just like a creature land option that like also acts as a sacrifice engine is like I think really good for that deck.
Yeah, really sweet for sure.
All right, that is it. That is everything we're talking about today.
The full set review, guys. Thanks for sticking with us for yet another set review here on the MMCast. Be sure to check out Battle Bosses. We mentioned at the beginning of the show, it is an awesome game made by Kess. Alex has worked his butt off on this game for a long time. It's now available. You can order it from us directly. It's going to keep evolving and developing, and I can attest I have played it. I really enjoy it. You guys should check it out. Alex, if people want to just check out Battle Bosses, they should just go to Kess.co, right?
BattleBosses.com.
Okay, BattleBosses.com. Yep. Go check out BattleBosses.com, and you guys can find out more about the game. On the other end of things, I mention this every show, but 1 month from now, I will be hitting the road. I'll be going to Denver, Austin, and Orlando that first weekend and playing 11 shows over the course of 5 weeks. It's going to be really fun. I'm definitely looking forward to it. If any of you guys have ever thought about maybe giving a listen to my music, I would appreciate it. I'm on Spotify, Apple Music, just Ben Bateman. My next song comes out in a couple weeks, and I'm hitting the road for the tour, so all the dates will be kind of like just meet and greets and hangouts, basically. So if you want, if I'm coming to your city and you want to hang out for an evening, grab a ticket. It'd be fun to see you there.
Absolutely. And last but not least, make sure to check out that TCG player link below. I am at Kess Wiley, everywhere on the internet. Tonight we are doing, if you're listening to this on Monday night, or if you missed it and you want to just check it out, because it will live there forever, but until Twitch kicks it off as a VOD, we're doing our Innistrad Midnight Hunt Commander Brewoff on stream, twitch.tv/KessWiley at 7:30 p.m. PST. So you can hang out. We'll be playing a bunch of new decks. I'm probably playing the new blue black Investigate Legend. I don't know what Ben is playing. I don't know if he knows what he's playing, but we have a bunch of cool stuff.
I don't know yet. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, so you got to find that out. So we'll see you guys tonight if you pay attention to that. If not, we'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you all every Monday on this podcast.
Bye, guys.
This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.